Good morning. This is Frank Setapani with the CBS World News Roundup.
Czechoslovakia's revolution is over, but its renaissance has just begun.
President Bush began a week-long trip to Europe and the Persian Gulf by helping Czechoslovakia celebrate the anniversary of its Velvet Revolution, an upheaval that toppled communism but exposed a host of new challenges. Those problems may not lend themselves to kid gloves treatment, but the president promised that Czechoslovakia's new democratic government would not have to face them alone.
We will not fail you in this decisive moment. America will stand with you to that end.
The president offered to help by giving Czechoslovakia an open door to trade with the U.S., by providing American technology, and by asking Congress for $60 million to encourage private investment that would bolster the Czechoslovak economy. At a joint news conference later, President Václav Havel was asked if he was satisfied with the commitment.
V parlamentu, který jste zajisté slyšeli,
President Bush shows a lot of understanding for our problems.
But as Mary Hockaday in Prague reports, many private citizens are wondering whether they can overcome the pain that goes along with Czechoslovakia's gain.
The anniversary has seen intense reflection on what has really changed in the last year. Some people feel not enough and say it's not appropriate to celebrate. Student leader Natasha Dudinska.
Is there anything to celebrate? I don't think the thing we began can go back. I just think that it's too much work in front of us, and this is just the beginning.
It certainly is. After 40 years, the truth about the state of the country is emerging, a story of environmental devastation, out-of-date technology, and unproductive industry. Turning the country round is proving painful. Price rises and growing unemployment overshadow the new freedoms to travel or read what you want. Foreign investors are interested but cautious. Another problem is tension between ethnic Czechs and Slovaks, which was suppressed for 40 years. It's now exploded with new force, and there have been loud calls for independence for Slovakia. But there are signs of hope as well. The creation of a free market economy has begun, and the new democratic institutions are firmly in place. But Czechs and Slovaks still ask when they will taste the fruit of the revolution. Mary Hockaday for CBS News, Prague.
Moments ago, President Bush arrived in Wenceslas Square to lay a wreath at the site where resistance fighters battled the Nazis and a generation later the communist government that crushed the Prague Spring Reform Movement. In his prepared remarks, the president said the world will never forget what happened here, the days of anguish and the days of hope. In Moscow, Soviet President Gorbachev is moving swiftly on a promise to rid his government of officials blocking reforms needed to revive a collapsing Soviet economy. Jonathan Sanders reports.
The Soviet president demanded that he be given more powers to enforce governmental decrees. Taking heed of demands made by the leader of the vast Russian Federation, Boris Yeltsin, Gorbachev promised to involve leaders of the country's 15 republics in key decisions. He also proposed creating a vice presidency. That may be a response to last week's attempted assassination of the Soviet president. And to break the pervasive sense of political stalemate, Gorbachev's prime minister, Nikolai Ryzhkov, told the Soviet parliament that the time had finally come to decide on whether he and other government ministers should resign. Jonathan Sanders, CBS News, Moscow.
He was in Prague, but when he addressed Czechoslovakia's Federal Assembly, President Bush made a point of addressing the crisis in the Persian Gulf.
You know, from your own bitter experience, that the world cannot turn a blind eye to aggression. You know the futility and vain hope that aggressors can be appeased.
The president's response to what he considers Iraq's naked aggression against Kuwait and U.S. Middle East policy in general came in for criticism today from Jordan's King Hussein. Alan Pizzi reports from Amman.
In a speech to open the Jordanian parliament today, the king said the West tolerated what he called premeditated murder of Palestinians by Israeli troops in Jerusalem with a timid rebuke of both sides. At the same time, the king charged, the West adopted, in his words, a course of military escalation, unyielding positions, and economic strangulation in the Gulf. The theme of double standards strikes a deep and responsive chord in the Arab world. It is the one issue in the Gulf situation on which all Arabs seem to agree. The Jordanian monarch said he would continue to pursue his efforts to find an Arab solution to the crisis. Alan Pizzi, CBS News, Amman.
A London newspaper, The Independent, reports that Iraq may have three super guns capable of firing 100-pound shells more than 400 miles. That means they could hit the capital cities of Iraq's Middle East neighbors. It's not known whether those guns are operational. A top Iraqi general warns that the U.S.-led military force would be in for a few surprises if it attacks. He didn't go into detail, but did say the uncalculated developments would prevent an offensive from succeeding. A crowd estimated at 2,000 people turned out for a mass marking the first anniversary of El Salvador's Jesuit massacre. Frank Smythe reports.
Dozens of bishops and other clergy from around the world came to El Salvador to celebrate a large outdoor mass. It was held on the same university campus where six Jesuit priests and two women were murdered 1 year ago. Several Salvadoran army officers have been charged with the crime, but critics say the military is blocking the investigation. Father Paul Tipton is from the Association of Jesuit Colleges and Universities in the United States.
We're so locked into the concept of sort of getting in bed with a military structure in these Latin American countries because somehow we thought that would be what would protect democracy, not realizing we were building up a powerful, autonomous military force that really controls the country.
Jesuit leaders also charge that U.S. officials have withheld key evidence in the investigation. U.S. Ambassador William Walker attended the memorial service, but the American ambassador refused to comment on new charges in the case. Frank Smythe for CBS News, San Salvador.
In Winston-Salem, North Carolina, a judge has imposed the death sentence on Blanche Taylor Moore, the preacher's wife convicted of killing a one-time boyfriend by spiking his milkshakes and pudding with arsenic. 20-year-old computer hacker Robert Riggs will have to do prison time for tapping into a 911 emergency telephone network serving nine southern states. A federal judge in Atlanta sentenced Riggs to 21 months behind bars, despite his lawyer's argument that Riggs had no criminal intent. Defense attorney Michael Hauptman says the stiff punishment could backfire.
The people who are doing the hacking, rather than being inquisitive, are going to be much more terroristic in their activities.
Two other hackers implicated in the scheme were given 14-month sentences. When drug agents serving search warrants in Lancaster, California, stumbled on an extraordinarily high electric bill, their suspicions were aroused. By tracing the bill, they found a sophisticated underground marijuana farm complete with irrigation and lighting systems on a sprawling 20-acre estate. It's 10 past the hour.